We're in an extremely serious and unprecedented situation.
It is clear that this House faces a much more fundamental question. Does this House want to deliver Brexit?
For Prime Minister Theresa May, Monday was a very bad day.
I've listened very carefully to what has been said in this chamber and out of it.
It's been over 2 years since Brexit, when voters in the United Kingdom decided in a referendum to leave the European Union. But with a March 2019 deadline fast approaching, officials have yet to iron out just what the UK's relationship with the economic bloc will look like.
From listening to those views, it is clear that while there is broad support for many of the key aspects of the deal, on one issue, the Northern Ireland backstop, there remains widespread and deep concern. As a result, if we went ahead and held the vote tomorrow, the deal would be rejected by a significant margin.
Time is running out. And for those who thought a deal negotiated by May with the remaining 27 EU nations might bring some order, well, that all fell apart on Monday.
We will therefore defer the vote scheduled for tomorrow and not proceed to divide the House at this time.
A postponement of the vote, it didn't go over well.
The government has lost control of events and is in complete disarray. Yep.
That's Labour leader Jeremy Corbyn speaking at Monday's hearing at the House of Commons. We'll look at the long and winding road right now on The Takeaway. Here to help us make sense of the chaos is Gillian Tett, the U.S. managing editor for The Financial Times. Gillian, welcome to The Takeaway.
Great to be on the show.
And if you thought that as an American that Brexit would not affect you, think again. Andrew Marshall is vice president of communications at the Atlantic Council and a former foreign editor of The Independent. Andrew, thanks for joining us.
Good to be with you.
So, Gillian, let's start with you. This was a very dramatic postponement of the vote. How did this deal come about?
This was indeed a very dramatic postponement. And frankly, postponing was not something which most people thought would happen. It's deeply embarrassing, deeply humiliating for the government, and has tossed the UK into even more uncertainty after, frankly, almost 3 years' worth of deep uncertainty. It came about because Theresa May realised that she simply could not have enough votes in Parliament to pass the deal she'd cut with the rest of the EU. Rather than submit herself to an embarrassing defeat, which would almost certainly force the vote of no confidence and pushed her out, she's basically taking a very bold gamble and going to the rest of the European Union pretty much on her knees, begging them to do something, anything, to help her actually get this deal through Parliament.
I want to play a little bit more of Prime Minister May yesterday. This is a clip that we think seems to really illustrate the core of the impasse here.
If you want to remain part of the single market and the customs union, be open that this would require free movement, rule taking across the economy, and ongoing financial contributions, none of which are, in my view, compatible with the result of the referendum. If you want to leave without a deal, be upfront that in the short term this would cause significant economic damage to parts of our country who can least afford to bear the burden.
Gillian, tell us a little bit about those two competing narratives that May is trying to reconcile there.
Well, she is absolutely correct, because when the Brexit votes happened, there was a perception by the Brexiteers that the UK could essentially leave the rest of the European Union without causing a great deal of damage, and that it would probably be able to maintain trading relations with the rest of the bloc, but not have to subject itself to the European Union's rules or make contribution to the European Union's central kitty. What has become clear in the last couple of years are two things. Firstly, that the European Union really operates with four interrelated pillars: free movement of capital, people, goods and services. And essentially, it won't take any one of those four elements out of the rest of the pot and just let the UK, say, enjoy free trade without having free movement of people. But the other huge problem that almost nobody foresaw when the Brexit vote happened is Northern Ireland. Because if Northern Ireland is inside the UK, which has a complete break from the rest of the European Union, you have to put a new border between North and South Ireland, and that jeopardises the peace process and all manner of economic ties. But if Northern Ireland remains inside the rest of the European Union, you have to put a border between Northern Ireland and the rest of the UK and essentially break the UK up. And it's a completely intractable problem which nobody has solved yet.
Gillian, what's been the EU's reaction to the collapse?
Well, essentially what Jean-Claude Juncker, told Theresa May this morning, and he's head of the European Commission, is that there won't be any renegotiation of the deal, that the deal on the table is the only deal on the table. And it's difficult to overstate the degree to which the rest of the European Union is absolutely fed up with this. You have tremendous amounts of distraction in France and Germany and elsewhere right now. Macron, the president of France, is dealing with his own internal crisis, and he's in no mood to give concessions and doesn't have the attention span to do that. In Germany, Angela Merkel is stepping down in the future, and again, there's a great concern about where German politics is heading. Italy's got its own endless, never-ending financial crisis and tensions. So nobody on the European Union side is willing to sit down and go through time-consuming, difficult negotiations. They may give Theresa May a bit more language. They may give her a few concessions here or there. They may play along with her and hope the sheer effect of waiting forces the British politicians to recognise that there's no better deal on the table and they have to vote for this. But it's not going to be an easy resolution on any side whatsoever.
You know, one of the interesting things is that the what next question here is one that even the New York Times had to essentially draw a map to explain what all the possibilities are that could happen after this this failure. What happens next? In your opinion, what is the most likely scenario for May and for Brexit going forward?
Right now, there is an incredibly wide range of possibilities of what could happen next. The possibility of the UK never leaving has definitely risen because people who want a second referendum are basically rallying the troops and getting ready to push for that very hard. The problem is that the Labour leader, Jeremy Corbyn, has not yet indicated whether or not he would support that. It's also entirely possible that Theresa May does manage to eventually force this deal through Parliament, partly because the act of waiting long enough will force politicians to realise how unpleasant many of the other alternatives are. But the other risk, which really spooks the financial markets, is, as Theresa May said, a crashing out without any deal at all, which would essentially mean a very significant rupture and shock to the British economy and the rest of the European Union, not to mention the wider global economy, next spring.
Gillian Tett with the Financial Times, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
And Andrew Marshall at the Atlantic Council, we want to bring you into the conversation now. Things fell apart yesterday pretty dramatically on the floor of the House of Commons, Andrew, but that really wasn't a surprise that the vote wasn't going to pass. Why did May take it this far?
Well, I think as Gillian pointed out, it's pretty clear that Brexit is broken. Prime Minister May has taken this deal probably as far as she can take it. She's now looking for changes to that. She knows that changes are not going to be easy to get from her European counterparts. But she also knows that her own party, the Conservative Party, is deeply divided over this. She knows that the Labour Party on the other side of the House of Commons is relishing every moment of her discomfort. It's not very clear she had too many other options. And now it's very, very unclear where things go. And in my opinion, that's bad for Britain. It's also bad for the United States when a country like the UK, with which the US has such strong ties, is in such an uncertain and risky position.
Let's talk a little bit about that relationship and the potential influence over the UK vote here. President Trump surprised many people in the UK when he came out against the Brexit deal. Do you think Trump contributed to the vote's ultimate failure?
I think it's unlikely it had much direct impact, but it's certainly true that people on the Eurosceptic wing of Theresa May's Conservative Party are eager and keen to begin discussions with the US on a free trade deal, which they think can be a significant boost for the UK economy. Whether or not that's true, it's certainly the case that relations with the US are going to be absolutely critical for the US, for the UK, as it deals with this this issue of realigning itself with the European Union. Unfortunately, I think in another time under another president, we might have seen more diplomatic activity around Brexit. We might have seen more effort to have some useful conversations. There's been very little of that. Washington is very consumed with its own psychodramas at the moment.
I want to bring in another conversation point here that this is not just about political stability. There's also this really important issue about economic stability. We saw U.S. markets yesterday reacting to the Brexit decision. Could there be economic ramifications here in the U.S.?
Yes, the trade between the UK and the US is significant. The UK is one of the US's top five export markets. But I think the really important connections there are, firstly, the two countries are very big investors in each other. They're the largest investors in each other's markets, with something like a million jobs in both countries, depending upon investment from the other. And the connections in particular between the financial services sectors are incredibly tight. London and New York really are the nylon cities. They trade together, they work together. They are almost two halves of the same person. And dislocations to that, which the financial services industry has been trying to deal with as we get closer and closer to what's a very uncertain deal, would have an impact, I think, on both sides of the Atlantic.
Andrew, what's been the EU reaction generally? I mean, I know it's hard to take that entire landmass and give one sense of it, but are people in favor generally, or is there a sense that, they can take it or leave it?
You'd find many, many different strands of opinion in Europe about the UK's departure. There are those that would say, well, you were never on board for this in the first place. It's time to go and good riddance. There are others that would say, well, we actually shared some of your questions, some of your doubts. We'd love to have you stay in. Why can't you remain within the European Union, making your points inside the club rather than outside? There is, I think, the predominant sense is one of bewilderment, that here is this country that has a reputation for stability, for a stable, well-established political culture, for making reasonably good political decisions at many critical points over the years. And apparently it's thrown all of that out the window.
Andrew Marshall is Vice President of Communications at the Atlantic Council. Thank you, Andrew.
Thank you.